Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. This week on the podcast is a good friend of mine called Reese Evans, aka EV Pro. I've known Reese for probably about 6 or 7 years, initially through him being a videographer, content creator for MK. He used to tour a lot with MK and has filmed many artists over the years. He's also in the process of transitioning through to being a DJ producer, and is doing pretty well at it. So I wanted to get him on the podcast, talk about a lot of content stuff, and also talk about his transition of kind of ditching the camera and moving on to being an artist. So without further ado, EV Pro. Mr. Reese Evans, what's cooking, man?
Yo, yo, what's good, Mr. Will Clark?
How's it going?
I'm not too bad, man. I'm good. It's been a manic couple of days. Just with like busy new year, but yeah. It's been good, man. What about yourself?
Cool, man. Yeah, good. I obviously this isn't coming out in January, so yeah. The whole New Year stuff, people are gonna be like, why the fuck are they talking about New Year?
Yeah, but sorry, I've just dated that within literally the number one rule of podcasting is don't date the podcast. But, and I've done it within the first 10 seconds.
But so, it's like literally, yeah, guys, this was recorded in January, but sorry, we're all busy, so we've got to get shit done beforehand. Back up these podcasts. But yeah, man, I'm good, man. I'm pretty good. Just back on the podcast game, back on the production game, had a few days off, and that's about it, mate. That is about
sick.
It.
Sick.
So I wanted to get you on. Thanks for coming on, first of all. Really appreciate you taking the time out. There's a few aspects I want to talk to you about. I've known you for probably since 2016.
Yeah, I was trying to think earlier, actually, when the first time I met you, I think it was, I have a feeling it was at a warehouse project.
Yeah, probably.
I think it was at a warehouse project.
I think that was 2016 or 2017.
I think it would have been 17.
Because I left Marcy and Mark 2018, and we'd known each other for a while before then.
Yeah, because it was through that cycle that I met yourself, and then yeah, man, it's mad to think how many years ago now?
A long time.
Six, seven years ago. It's just, time's flying, like, it's just, yeah.
Absolutely flying, it's stupid. But yeah, I guess, obviously, I met you as somebody that creates content for artists. And like really good content as well. There's only a few people that actually like create really good content for people, and you're one of them. You're one of the best, especially on the video form.
Thank you.
It's really hard to create interesting content, and especially over the years of, even from when we first met, things have changed massively. Where it used to be about long form content, it used to be about after movies, it was about wide shots, long stuff for YouTube and things like that, and how that's changed to like 15 second clips and using your iPhone. I want to go into like, how did you kind of get into the whole content creation? And then also, we've got so much more to talk about as well, but I want to kind of get from the start of how you started in that career.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting one, because I've always been interested in media, music, visual, yeah, all of that since I was tiny. I think the original passion probably started for it was every Christmas, my dad would set up the old VHS camera, have it all set up on the tripod and film me and my brother opening presents.
Amazing.
But after the opening presents, I'd then just start, you know, just fiddling around with a camera. And yeah, I guess it just grew from there. Like, and in school days, I was lucky enough to get a camera and started filming like YouTube videos, yeah, little short films. And that sort of continued it through. And then I actually I studied at a sixth form, and I was like, yeah, I really want to go into this. I want to be a director. I want to do XYZ. And it just ended up basically being a course that, yeah, it's going to be 60% practical. And yeah, it wasn't, it was all theory, which standard. Don't get me wrong, the theories like helped massively with anything, but it was not really what I wanted. So the real big turning point for me was sort of being a year into sixth form, quitting, leaving and going to a college. And actually at that point, I wanted to get into radio broadcasting.
Okay.
So we tried to do the radio course. They're like, oh, we haven't got, there isn't enough people on this course.
Yeah.
So, but we actually have loads of spaces on the TV and film. And I'm like, oh, that's, you know, this is a bonus. Yeah. I like that as well. So I went into that, and then we could hire equipment out for free through the college. And my brand, being at the time I'd started DJing, I was DJing like the local under 18 circuit. I'd just turned 18. So I was, you know, starting to break into, not necessarily DJing, but starting to go out to all the parties, getting to know the club managers. And I just messaged a random promoter one day and just said, hey, do you want an after movie? £100. And turned out to be the biggest house promoter in the county. Little did I know at the time. So yeah, it just sort of spiraled.
Who was
from
that?
There. It was a guy called, he went under the name Danny Quattro.
Okay, I know Danny.
Yeah. Went, and I essentially, through Danny, through Pete Dorlin, through Dyson Payne, who had Too Damn Glam.
Yeah.
I mean, them boys essentially enabled me to create the grassroots every single Friday, Saturday. A lot of people don't know, and I sing its praises an awful lot. And Southend back in the day had an underground scene that, if you were to look at it now, would rival any major city.
Yeah.
It was honestly incredible. We had like three or four super clubs that all had the very diverse rooms of music. Every single week, there was one in, one out house music events of all different, you know, subgenres.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, what was it? On one weekend, we had, was it Eats Everything, Nina Kravis, Darius Sarossian, like all these artists. And when you look at it now, obviously the scene has developed
massively,
you know, commercially a lot more, and there's a lot more availability for that. But it was like, when I look back at it now, I'm just like, well, this is insane. Like,
well, I think this,
you
is
see
the
all of them names that were there, and it's like,
I think this is the crazy thing is, like, you look at, they were all, a lot of them were like all in smaller clubs as well. And and smaller clubs back then was like the scene. Like, you wouldn't get these warehouse projects, you wouldn't get the drum sheds, you wouldn't get the print works, you wouldn't get all of those like massive, like Brooklyn Mirages, you wouldn't get any of these. And it's only since since the scene's become way more commercialized in a positive way that you get those massive venues and huge lineups. However, it takes away from the underground scene, and it takes away from like building the culture. Cause I think the culture starts in an underground way. But now, a lot of artists' first gigs now are fucking in warehouse projects, right?
Yeah, it's insane. It really is. I mean, it's a really, really interesting one, because it's so like I'm like with like one of the like I run a brand now, a house brand, and I'm just taking everything that they all these guys were doing 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like when you look at the artists that they're like, I just find it crazy. Like the first ever video, first ever after movie I filmed was for Darius Sarossian.
Yeah.
Or not for him, but he was the guest at the club. Then the week after it was, I'm going to try to think of the names now, Denson Picard. Then you had Infinity Inc. Then you had like really good, like really, really good, credible underground artists at the time. And I just remember being like, not really. I was so new to that scene when this is back when my house music was David Guetta in, in the charts. But as everyone who discovers, you know, that house musical journey, you start off there. I remember there's a really good clip of Carl Cox saying it on an interview. And he says he doesn't envy people who get, say, like, or people will give him stick saying, oh, why are you doing, you know, various festivals, you know, when it's deemed as EDM, say. And he's like, no, because that's how their journey starts. Yeah. They'll come through the commercial route and then they start to dig deeper. And before you know it, you've got these, you know, the scene building out. I mean, even then, I think you get the crossover, obviously, the cycles we have where, you know, underground music essentially breaks through, you know, especially recently where you got, you know, stuff like Luke Dean's stuff, you know, breaking into mainstream radio.
It's been happening for the last 5 years, I think. But even more so since COVID, I think you have the underground. There's what used to be the underground is now the overground, is now commercial. You have artists doing collabs with artists that you wouldn't like. David Guetta and Black Coffee, that just would never have happened like 10 years ago. People would laugh at that shit. Mm. Like, it's, I feel like there's like a disconnect where people say they're underground and it's like, there is no such thing as underground unless you don't want to make money.
Yeah, essentially. I feel like as well, like, obviously, there's, I guess you could determine it, you know, classes underground scene and then underground sound. But it's, I feel like ultimately, surely everybody is doing this to do it as everybody, or everybody who's trying to make music, 9 times out of 10 wants it to be the only thing they do. They want it to do it. And unfortunately, the fact of life is you need to earn money to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we can't, I'm sure if all of us could just not have to worry about money anymore, you know, it'd be a lot easier. But you do have to play the game sometimes. And yeah, it's a very interesting conversation, I think, to end up having it around it.
I think it's also strange because it comes back to content, right? All of this for me, which is really interesting, it all comes back to, mate, that's a big bottle of Lucozade.
I know. That or I'm just really small.
Probably both.
Probably both.
I can't really say much, can I? Let's be honest.
Kings over here, mate.
It comes back to content because I think the reason why all of this has got so big isn't necessarily about the music. I think the music has a part to play in it, but I think the content that artists, DJs, producers are posting on their social medias is the reason why the underground is no longer the underground sound or the underground. I think it's purely because, like, they're posting content that reaches the masses and that then sells more tickets.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because when you think back, I mean, back when I was doing them, it's like after movies, like the development of everybody would have wanted an after movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really video as much anymore, but even in the like, when I was, like the last few years I was doing it, I wouldn't hardly no requests because it just doesn't, people, you know, because of TikTok, because of Instagram Reels, the attention span is so small. It's, and it's even less, like it was short before. I think on average it was like 5 seconds you had to get somebody's attention pre-COVID. You're now down to about 2 seconds, 2 to 3 seconds, which when you think about it, you think, oh, that's not that long. It is. It's enough time for someone to put their finger on a screen and swipe. It has definitely changed it. I mean, even I know, like, there's a bunch of DJs. I've even been guilty of this in my sets before where I'm like, oh, well, I know I need some good content, so I know I need to not necessarily play a specific track, but it needs to be played at a certain time to ensure that I get the right reaction, to ensure that I get good content so I can then get a future gig.
That's such a content creator's view on it, which is really interesting though. I'm not knocking it. It completely just changes the way the industry is, there's no right or wrong. I think you're talk to the like the OGs and be like, fuck you.
Yeah, they're not gonna like that.
But like, realistically, if your content's doing well and you have a big audience is where the money is.
I brand it to people like when I speak to DJs and stuff who are like, oh, I don't want to do content. I don't want to do it. Yeah. I look at it and I always put the question to them. I say, social media content is the modern day version of making CDs and flyering outside clubs.
Yeah.
The whole strategy has just become digital. You used to put flyers on people's cars, promote your parties, used to throw parties to get people's attention, used to make mixed CDs and give them out.
Yeah.
Bless you. Just on the basis that you wanted exposure, because ultimately it's attention arbitrage, isn't it? It's whoever has the most attention effectively wins. Now, I say wins, but that's not because it's obviously a subjective thing.
Yeah.
You know, one artist might be like, I want to get to the top of the stage, be DJ Mag number one, earning millions of pounds, and that's that.
Yeah.
Where number one to someone else might just be, you know what? I've just got music I want to make. I want to put it out. If people appreciate and I can earn a little bit of money or enough money to live, I'm happy. Excuse me. I'm happy because that's just what I want to do. There isn't a right or wrong in that. Yeah. At all. It's completely subjective to the person. It's interesting because I know some big DJs who do that. They are crafted. Part of crafting their set is what content can I get out of this set to help boost the profile online. And I guess you can look at it different ways, isn't it? It's, you know, is that bad? Is that good? I think ultimately, as long as you're putting the audience first, I feel like the sound does have to come first. I don't feel like you have to, you know, just do it. Like it's
interesting that you say that because what audience are you putting first? When like, and I, and this
great
and,
question,
and
yeah.
this is the thing is like, okay, this is wild for me to even say this, but let's say, for instance, you have 1 million followers on Instagram, okay, and every single one of your videos is doing like 400,000 views, okay, on Instagram and TikTok, right? Let's just say that, for example, but you're only playing in front of 1,000 people. What's more important?
Probably 1,000 people, to be honest.
Do you think?
Yeah, because I feel like them 1,000 people, because it's the way I look at it is everything compounds.
Yeah.
So I did it with I tour managed one or two DJs and we had a gig. First night of his tour was amazing. Second night of the tour, I'm just gonna be honest, it was shit. It just wasn't great. Like, and he would say that as well. And he was really, really nervous. And I said to him, I said, you've got club owners here, you've got other people here. Now, whatever the club's done as promo is irrelevant at this point. Now, even if there's 50 people or 500, you need to go out and deliver exactly the same set or as close to as you can.
Agreed.
And he did. And within half hour, the bookers and the club managers come up and just went, we are so impressed. Like any other DJ would have just not got on the mic, not done this, not done their skills, but you didn't. You actually provided it. That's why I think like let's just say there's 100 people there. Them 100 people are now going to go away and tell at least one or two people, oh yeah, that blah, blah, blah was really, really good. It was quiet, but he still delivered.
Yeah.
Like it's then compounding. So when you eventually, it's all like devil's in the details, isn't it? So like I've been critiqued a couple of times across my multiple things I do. People are like, you're a perfectionist. You spend too much time on it. I'm like, yes, but every single thing is strategic. It's not.
Yeah.
And maybe that's wrong. But there is essentially a game plan to everything. You know, there is, okay, well, if we change this little thing, I'm doing that because, you know, or I'm making dead eye contact with someone on, it actually happened at the weekend. I'm playing a track, there's a girl on someone's shoulders filming and I directly point at her and sing the lyrics to like the song that it is. She's then posted it online, reshared it. I've now got 4 more followers off the back of her friendship group.
Yeah.
And I said to them, I said, thanks. And I messaged him. I said, thanks for bringing the energy. Like, you killed it. I was like, hope to see it at the next show. Literally, like, 100%, let us know when you're next playing.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's 4 more fans built. And the people may look, oh, yeah, it's 4 fans. It's nothing. But if you do that every single show and then you do it to 10 people, you know, all of, you know, within the space of a year, you've gone from 50 new fans to potentially thousands if you play it right.
No, I agree. I think I still have that kind of motto that, like, every DM that comes in, I respond to. Everybody that tags me in a photo or a video, I comment on it. Like, I think there is a level of personability that grows a career and keeps a career going. It's not about, yeah, you might have a record, a video or a piece of content that goes viral, but that doesn't really turn into ticket sellers. It's how can you create every piece of content that's on social media to be as big as it possibly can. Like, my views aren't the best, my comments aren't the best, but, like, I make sure I respond to everybody. I make sure I respond to every single comment and things like that. And I think people actually really, I think that that creates a different fan base than, let's say, for instance, somebody that's, like, got millions of followers that just gets hundreds of thousands of comments and things like that. Yes, they're making more money. More people are turning up to their shows. They're selling more tickets. But I feel like those fans are way more likely to go and jump onto the next big thing than stay valued to stay on that artist as, like, they're my favorite artist. And I think for me, that's one of my goals, is to make people me their favorite artist.
Yeah, I feel like it's excuse me, at the end of the day, it all comes down to it's relationships.
Yeah,
you know, it's you taking the time to respond to somebody's comment, respond to a DM. We got to understand that people put artists and celebrities and so on a pedestal. So they're part of their mind, they're not really expecting a response. But yeah, if you do then respond, they're like, oh my word, like,
yeah,
wow, they're going to make that extra effort to come to a show. And again, it's like, it's the compounding thing. You do it to one person, you do it to another, they're then just going to say, oh yeah, that Will Clark, like, he's a really, really cool guy. Like, he's playing again. Should we go see him? And then they become more diehard fans. And, you know, maybe then they buy your merch or your apparel, and then it moves on to other stuff. And then they're buying your records. And then it's compounding. It's not a direct transaction. Like, oh yes, posted a video, 100,000 likes.
Yeah.
It's not that exact transactional, but it's essentially the long game. That's what you're playing. That's something that I've always said to all the artists I've worked with. I'm like, this is, you know, if you can spend the time to do it, and I don't think it's just doing it, and I think sometimes a lot of artists have the they don't like doing it, and I feel sometimes you can tell when it's forced.
Yeah,
but I feel like you actually, realistically, I feel like you need to try. Artists should try, and I feel they should try and get to a place where they want to do it because it's giving back to the fans. Like, I always used to have a thing, like, when someone leaves a comment, obviously it gets to a stage on people's accounts where you can't respond to maybe every single comment. You got your 2,000 comments, have you? But, like, at that stage, especially in that building stage, and I know there'll probably be loads of artists who are listening to this hearing that, is when you're in the building stage and somebody leaves a comment or they re-share your post, like, go say thank you, reply to their comment, yeah, because they've taken time out of their day to do it. And also, it helps your engagement go up because the socials view that as an extra comment.
Exactly.
So, like, it's a win-win all round. Like, you're giving back to them. So,
I agree, but I also think even if you're getting 2,000 comments or if you're getting 2,000 DMs a day, it's an investment to your business to employ somebody to do that.
Exactly.
And, I mean, and I think,
if you're getting 2,000 comments, then more than likely you've got the income support there in order to do that, to put that support structure around you to ensure that.
Yeah.
And some people may say, oh, well, that's morally wrong. But if it's all coming from a good place, then I guess it really sort of comes down to intentions in a way.
Well, I think it's also, morally it is coming from the right place, but also morally, like, as long as you're being respectful, morally it's absolutely fine, because realistic.
Yeah, I mean, maybe don't start trolling on people in the comments.
Yeah, but like, I think the thing is because everybody knows this is a business, right? Everybody.
That's why it's called the music business.
It's transactional. They buy a ticket to come and see you play. That automatically turns it into a business. It's not like we're giving it to you for free. Maybe on the like listening side of music, people don't really understand because it's streaming and it's pretty much like getting everything for free. But like, I think that's the thing is like, how do you invest in yourself as an artist to create a business that can have growth? Do you think having somebody create content for you is a good investment?
Yes, 100%. And I think not just short form content, I think long-term content. So I realize I completely deterred off from the journey, but from obviously doing them clubs and stuff, I did a couple of seasons abroad doing video and then eventually started to meet bigger artists. And as you do, you just progress your career, just working, progressing until then obviously landed the opportunity with, you know, as we both know, MK. So, and then from there, it just sort of went rocket ship moment, to be honest. But, you know, one thing when touching, the reason I brought that back up is because when we were shooting the content for MK, I mean, I was quite fortunate in a way that, you know, when I was brought on board, originally it was just after movies. And then as time progresses and, you know, you get to know the team, you get to know Mark better and so on, you become a lot more invested in the brand, especially me. And I think I'm very fortunate in a lot of the people I've worked with, I've been fans with anyway.
Yeah.
And a fun fact is actually that MK, when Look Right Through was blowing up, played in Southend.
Yeah.
And I was the light jock on that night, which is very, very odd. And then full circle, you know, 6 years later, we're touring and all this. So, but yeah, I remember pitching to them and saying, look, you know, in order to build this relationship with you know, the fans and keep building like the, you know, the Mark and Marcy, were like, okay, how can we build it out? How can we do this? I'm saying, well, I think we should do long form content. You know, we should give this a crack, because short form content's great, but if you can really get people to invest in, you know, the behind the scenes. And I think now, a couple of years ago, it wasn't so much. It, you know, everything had to be polished and had to be top quality. And I mean, Martin Garrix had, what, 5 full documentary team filming him all the time. And that was just going on his YouTube.
Yeah.
But I think now, luckily because of TikTok, the more raw, the better. Mm. So, you know, people just want the outtakes. They want the funny stuff that happens backstage. And I feel sometimes a lot of artists feel like they need to force it.
Yeah.
And they need to... There's a difference. And Gary Vee sums it up. He says, don't create content. Document. It's called document versus create. So just document the journey, because I think a lot of times when we're in it, in any profession really within the music industry, especially as artists, that is a job that 99.9% of the world are never going to be able to experience.
Mm, totally.
And so just you showcasing the little things, like, you know, being backstage beforehand, chilling out, the little jokes, someone locks their mate in a portaloo, like, you know, or even the stresses of, you know, I mean, we've all had it at sound checks where something isn't working, or a booth monitor stopped, or a CDJ has stopped, or something isn't working. And when you document them, I did a little bit of touring with James Hype. I had one thing he said, I mean, I've known James for years, but it was the first time filming their Moving Differently series. And he said one thing, he said, if any problems happen, do not stop recording.
Yeah, yeah.
Just record the whole thing. And it was very on the basis of, look, I want to show that these mess ups happen, you know, decks fail, you know. I mean, and literally on the first show, the entire Ethernet hub, like network switch just went down, the whole thing, like 3 times in the first 10 minutes of the set. So it was just like, and he's like, no, document that, because that's, I want people to know it's not all glitz and glam. It's not all these massive, it's not Tomorrowland and all these big stages. It's, you know, even Tomorrowland, it happened, you know, mixer failed, you know, quick swap out. And then it's like, but then also congratulating, I guess, or saying to the team, massive thanks to the Tomorrowland team who got that straight working again.
Document
versus create is, especially if people are struggling to make content, you don't have to do TikTok dances, you don't have to do all this stuff. Like, I think if you just document your journey, you're naturally, you know, and it sounds like a lot to some people. If you just did one video a day of whatever you're doing, like, yo, I'm in the studio today, or like this, I'd be like, quit TikTok. I'd be like, really raw. Yo, what's good? I'm EV Pro, and I'm heading to the studio today. I'm on the Will Clark podcast. I'm absolutely buzzing for it. Yeah, known Will for years. It's going to be sick. And you're just documenting it, and, you know, I might put my phone in the corner, get a couple of clips.
Yeah.
You post that online, all right, it might do 200 views, but it also might do 100,000.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's... And it is tough, because... And people say, oh, but reels and all this, and you do have to have strategies in place. I feel like that is really, really important. But ultimately, a lot of people, you know, when people say they put up like subconscious barriers, it's, oh, I'll do that tomorrow. Oh, but I need this. Oh, and I've been guilty of it multiple times on many different things. But the thing is, you just need to get started.
Yeah, totally.
And you have to fight. And there is no right or wrong anymore with content.
So I want to go back. I'm really interested in this conversation, but I want to go back to what you were saying just a second ago with the long form content. And I love long form content more than anything. I'm like a massive consumer of YouTube and documentaries and like genuinely long form. I'm not a fan of, I don't watch things on TikTok. I don't really do Instagram reels that often. I know I post and all of that, but I just don't, it's not how I consume. The thing for me though, when I'm, as a touring artist, right, is like you and I have had this conversation before, is when having somebody that can document for you, especially on the long form document, is genuinely a really hard thing to have. Because let's say, for instance, especially nowadays, is I'm hiring a videographer or a photographer, especially at a big event, because of like financial, like not issues, but they cost a lot of fucking money, if you know what I mean. So for me, like I'll hire somebody that's also working three other artists at that event, because and then all you get is the clips. But then, so then you're like, okay, how do you do that as an artist? How do you get the behind the scenes stuff without being the biggest artists in the world? Because if you look at all the biggest artists in the world, they have that. But if you look at all like smaller artists, they don't have any of that. And it's only when there becomes a financial thing where like, oh, we can scale
that. Yeah.
Like even look at like Gary Vee. I was on his podcast last year, and like you look at the magnitude of the team behind them and you can see, oh, no wonder he can put out 10 items of content a day, because he's got such a big fucking team behind it, if you know what I mean. And I think how does an artist that's like trying to grow, even at my level where I earn reasonably good money, I have a good life, if you know what I mean, like what would be your advice for somebody like me or somebody even starting out to kind of get to that level?
I have the perfect answer for you as well. So it's what I call a golden nugget. So they're rare, they're not easy to find, but you can find them. And it might be a little bit contradictory really, or controversial what I'm going to say, but essentially you have to find someone who they don't fully realize their full potential yet.
Yeah.
Or you can see their full potential. So I would like to say, so a great example is when James Hype wanted to start moving differently and have someone document. Obviously I've just known James for years. He knows I'm a content creator. James knew he couldn't afford to have me on the road all the time. Mm-hmm. As much as I wanted, I would have loved to have done that.
Yeah.
It just wasn't feasible for both. That was just at the time of him starting it all up, it just didn't make sense. So he's like, look, I need to find somebody that I can take on who is good at their thing, but I'm not going to charge a thing. And I say this of everything, is that there are lots of creators out there who are really good at what they do, but they almost don't have the self-confidence in them to charge the price that they should be charging.
Yeah.
Now, I can totally understand how that sounds coming across. It almost feels like you're taking, trying to think of the word here, you're taking advantage of them.
Yeah.
Because they're not aware. But I feel like it's, in a way, like these people are out there because I was in the position. I'd like to hold my hands up and be big headed, but I like to say I was a golden nugget.
Yeah.
You know, at the time of, say, joining MK, where I knew I could produce a high level of content, but I just wasn't given that opportunity yet.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, the it's very, very hard to find. You need to essentially find some. You're looking for someone who, one, is good at what they do, or they know the basics, and you can spot. You can say, yeah, you know what? They've got the eye. You call it like the eye for it. Yeah. They've got the eye for content. They've done enough work where they know how the industry works. They know, let's say, backstage etiquette. They know how they should be around other artists. You know, not, let's say, you know, I'm on tour with Will and Will's super famous friend, friend walks in the room and they're like, oh my God, like, yeah, can I get a selfie? Like, no. Like, they have to have that stage etiquette. And then ultimately, I feel like what really makes it work is that they have to see the long-term vision of the artist and understand that they are a supporting role for that. Like when I was touring with Mark, all I wanted was for Mark to just get bigger.
Yeah.
And bigger and bigger. And obviously Mark's a massive artist as already, but it was like, I know if Mark gets bigger, the shows get bigger, which then effectively money. I make more money, but also the team as a whole wins. Like this is a win-win all round. You know, the project gets bigger. And that for me, I mean, they are really, really tough to find. And I've known some artists who have found them straight away.
Yeah.
It's the first person they went with. And the other person is, you know, it's taken them maybe, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 attempts. I know some artists that have gone through, thought they've got it, and then 3 months into touring, the videographer's just been like, I can't do it. Tour life's not for me. Yeah. Like, you know, I can't do these flights. I can't do the sleeping. I can't do the editing. And I think it's finding someone essentially who, it's tough for an artist because you're trying to convince somebody to come on a journey where only you see the end path.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really hard because I thought I had it for a period of time with somebody and I love them to bits still, but just realistically, the content wasn't good enough. And I think that's the thing is like, you do have to go through them, but it's also, I'm also like in the process of like, there's a lot of, for me, especially with what I see in the background of like hiring videographers or content creators and things like that, is there's always something that's just not right, not 100% right. And a lot of that is like quality of video or quality of sound. And
if you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's the thing that's a massive sucker for me, is that it's like you're charging a lot of money, but you're not giving the full quality, which means I'm just never going to hire you again.
Yeah.
But for me, like whilst you're saying that, I'm like, well, maybe I just buy all the gear and just employ somebody to do it, if you know what I mean, in that sense. Because it's like, is that a more cost effective way? I don't know.
It's really interesting because I think also as artists, I think unless you've seen a direct example of, you've got so many different sides of the coin. You know, you've got the content creator who thinks, well, I know best because this is my field.
Totally.
But then you've also got the artist who's like, well, I know exactly how I want it to look.
Yeah.
But the problem is, if the artist hasn't seen an example of that,
it's impossible.
How are they going to relay that to someone? I see it all the time, like with, you know, the artist or the artist I did look after. Like, we'd send videographers off. I'd give them you've seen the sheet. I give them the full breakdown. Yeah. XYZ. Do this. This is a bulletproof thing. And the content comes back, and it's still. And my mate, he always says, it's good content, but it's not EV Pro content. And I'm like, thank you, but yeah. it's. I feel like some of it though. It comes. There's so many things. Like for me. That people might, there'll be some artists that don't like my style of content, but there'll be some DJs that do really like it. But then I might do something because I've just picked up on it from being 10 years working as a videographer in the space.
Yeah.
It's a lot of it, even when I bring videographers on jobs, I did a really, really big job recently with a videographer I've used hundreds of times. Fantastic. I never have to, I give them the brief, they smash it. This was a really, really big job. I got into the editing suite. I just looked at it and I was just like, what?
Yeah.
How has this gone so left field?
Yeah.
You're meant to be like the one I trust. Like, and I've used them on other jobs and they've been fine since. And I was like, and then I'm like, did I mess up? Did I not give them enough brief? Mm. Maybe I overassumed, and it was a massive job. And I was just like, maybe I put the... Yeah, maybe I didn't communicate enough, yeah. and it's just looking at, but it just shows, like, even at that level with a team that I just absolutely know, like, I use exactly the same team at the weekend, and it got, and I'm looking through all the content like now, and I'm still realizing, like, wow, that content was really, really good, and I hardly gave them any pointers,
yeah,
because I didn't have to worry about it. But then that one job I got back, and I was like, damn, have I made a mistake here?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think for me, it's like it's really weird. It's really hit and miss. And I think you're right. As artists, we are so like, I can't speak for everybody. I can only speak for myself. But I'm so like anal about certain things, and I'm like, why are you doing that?
That is good though.
That
is good. Like, and I feel like you should be.
I know exactly what I want, but I think the thing is it goes back to that. Like, let's say for instance, I don't want to say the specific person or the specific show, but I had like last year, I had one of the biggest shows ever that like most artists work their career at. We've been working for the last 3 years to get to that level on or to get that festival. And we couldn't use a single video because the audio was terrible. And they were expensive. They were like $800, $900 to kind of pay.
It's expensive in the States as well. It's a lot more in the States than it is the UK. Like,
and I think that's the thing that I struggle with the most is like, I'd love somebody traveling with me full time. I'd love it. It'd be fucking great because you could do so much shit and it's like that speed. But the thing is, even when I did, the speed wasn't there and the quality wasn't there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm helping an artist at the minute, just with like their a bit like a consultancy thing. They've got someone like they're hired a big DJ. They've got someone hired a bit of the same position. And they're like, you know, like the pricing's fine, but it's just the content's good, but the speed just isn't there. Yeah. Like, you know, those who are in the business and know what touring is like, especially if you're a videographer, like. Unfortunately, it means that you have to edit maybe on a train or you have to edit on a flight. I mean, personally, I loved it because it was like, I'm on a flight, no interactions, no Wi-Fi, can just knuckle down and just get this work done.
Yeah.
So for me, I loved it, but a lot of people don't like that. A lot of people, I need to sleep. Well, you can structure everything else around it, you know, and tour life is not for everyone. Like it really is not. I mean, I've been quite fortunate. I've been a night owl since I was a kid. So the whole going to bed at 5. I mean, there was one weekend we did, which was, I don't know how.
With Mark.
The logistics. Yeah, don't know how the logistics got approved. We did Radio 1.
Because it was Marcy and Mark.
We were, say no more. if I speak, I'm in big trouble. But no, it was just a manic weekend. Like, I remember we did radio. We did literally went from London to Middlesbrough, Radio 1 weekend, flew from there, did Defected. then had like no sleep from Defected straight to We Are Festival, and then We Are Festival to a festival in Ireland, and then like I missed my flight the next day. I was just, you know, yeah. You just think like I woke up, I was there's no chance I'm making this. I was like, I'm so exhausted. I remember after the weekend, I was just like, please don't. I think that was like the first proper weekend of me fully touring with them, like officially.
Yeah.
And I was just like, don't ever do that again. Like, please. Like, that was. Like, I can do a lot of touring, but that, you know, you just think, no, I'm sorry, this is a joke. Yeah. I can't be doing this. Like,
it's fun. It's fun. But you're right.
It is fun.
I think that's the thing, is like, it's just finding, it's hard. Going back to Gary Vee, it's that hire and fire. He uses that, for example, and it's like, just hire people. It sounds awful, but it's like, hire and fire them until you find the right person.
I think they said, was it they hire fast, fire faster?
Yeah.
Because, and I've tried to take that when I was dealing with crew and stuff, and, you know, ultimately, you know, if someone isn't doing a good job, you have to communicate it as soon as possible, because obviously there's ways to deliver that information. But yeah, you sometimes, you know, I've had it with staff before, you know, videographers when I had an agency, and you're just dealing with it, and they're just not, you find out they're like, they're talking to the promoters when they're there saying, oh, next time go through me privately, it'll be cheaper. It's like, well, mate, I'm sorry, you're gone. Like, you know, you're not part of the total vision.
Yeah, and I think that's it. Total vision is really interesting. And I think sometimes it's actually down to us as artists and us as employers to actually get that vision across. And I think that's where sometimes I can go wrong, is like, I'm not communicating that vision correctly, because maybe I just presume, and I think it's wrong for me to presume that that's their vision as well. Maybe they don't even want to be a content creator. Maybe it's just something they want to do on the side, if you know what I mean. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the vision is, explaining the vision is definitely a major key. I mean, I had a gig where we got someone in to do live clips using all my equipment. So in my head, I was like, yes, content's going to be great. And I just assumed they would know that you don't film directly behind the head and you film over the shoulder. Mm. And anybody who's wondering that is because when you film directly behind someone's back, you can't see their face, you can't see the decks, you can see a bit of the crowd. But when you film over somebody's shoulder, let's call it the three layers. Background, you've got the crowd. The middle ground is, let's say, the decks, staging, and then you've got the side of the artist's face. You're ticking all the boxes for someone who is watching that content.
Yeah.
And effectively, that's why it's normally that content is the one that does the millions of views, because you can see it all. If you're seeing, I mean, especially the back of my head, if somebody sees the back of my head, it's not a very attractive sight.
They're putting sunglasses on, mate. That's what they're doing.
I'd like to think that one half of my face is, you know, slightly more attractive than the back of my head. But I had it. We had this gig and got the clips back. And warranted, it was the world's smallest DJ booth.
Yeah.
But I just sort of looked back and I said to him, I was like, oh, man, like, oh, this is all behind my head. Like, he's like, oh, how's the content? I'm just going to be honest, man. It's not that great. Like, yeah. I'll post some of it, but. Like, I'm really quite gutted, like, I'll be honest, just being honest. But it was also when, it was from that point, I realised that, just because he's a creative doesn't mean he's going to know everything that, say, I know, and the vision of how I want it to look.
Yeah.
Because for me, it's, I'm getting this content to get this outcome. Yes, you know, that is the process. Okay, I want the content shot this way, I want it to look this way, because I want this track to do well on social media so it can bring in more jobs or get more exposure. But obviously they don't see that. So I've found that when I communicate a little bit more, and it takes 30 seconds, say, okay, yeah, so I'm going to get you to film live clips. The style I want is similar to, say, Love Juice style, like this. Don't be scared. It's a fisheye. Don't be scared to go wider, because I can crop in. I can always zoom in. I can't zoom out.
Yeah.
Just make sure everything's in focus. Don't touch the settings. It's all good. And if you feel free, if you want to add some movement in, you can add movement in. And just giving them examples, and that 30 seconds of doing it, I'm now looking through the content and I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, this is what I wanted.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, it's explaining that vision, I think, is such a key part. And it's tough. And I feel like artists, if artists are hiring a content creator or something like that, try and get like a very short one sheet, which you can just send to anyone you're working with and just saying, look, these are the examples I want. You know, these are the specific styles. This is what I want. And this, and also just say, this is what the goal of the content is. Because I feel like when people know what the goal of the content is, you know, subconsciously in their head, they're going to fine tune that in their own little ways. Because they might think, oh, this is that artist's really big song. And I know their goal is to try get more exposure around this new record that's just released.
Yeah.
Or I know, or you ask them, okay, Will, roughly, when are you going to bring in your new track? Oh, I'm going to probably do it. The earliest would be half hour in. The latest will probably be, you know, it'll be in that half hour window. Yeah. Okay, cool. The battery's gone to 30% at 5 minutes before this half hour block. Right. I'm going to change the battery early because I don't want it to cut out just as his drop's coming on, which it's happened to me. I've been caught in that. And all of it, it's all them little things, but when you explain the outcome and the goal, it allows it. And not every creative will do it. And unfortunately, that is the basis of you just got to go through them. You got to go through them until you find that match. You know, in a very weird analogy to put it, it's a little bit like partners, you know. Some people meet the love of their lives and their future, you know, and their wives and husbands, first person they meet in school.
Yeah.
Other people don't get married and stuff until they're in their 50s or 60s. So... Mm. It's there is no definitive yes, this. It's just trial and error, essentially. Because it's also personalities. Like, especially if you're touring, you that person, you're going to see that person more than your family and friends.
100%. I think also for me, it's as artists, the same as you, like, we have to find what works for us and for our audience. I think it's very easy to, like, okay, let's say, for instance, use Mochak, for example. Absolutely blowing up, right, on social media. That's how his career blew up. But if I did a video like that, it's not going to blow up. So what works for me? And I guess my question for you is, like, how does an artist work that out?
It's tough, isn't it? I think trying to... excuse me. I think looking at... It's a really interesting one because it is so subjective down to that individual.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you think when you look at, say, like the bass line or the drum and bass scene, there's quite a few artists that have the content of just shake, like, not shaky, but zoom in, zoom out. Yeah. But then you also have, you know, with, you know, like your tech house and underground house, you have where it's on a gimbal and it's very static and floaty. But you then also have, you know, stuff where it's very energetic and it's just filming in the booth. And I feel ultimately you should never try to be like someone else. There was some artists that we both know, actually, they were trying to up their content game, and they were like, oh, like, we feel like we should maybe go down like that Fisher route of just being funny and like comedy skits. And I just said to them, I said, like, no offense, lads, but I don't think that's right. Like, you shouldn't force it, because people don't understand. Fisher's not an act.
No, it's him.
Fisher, that is Fisher. Yeah. Like, if you met him in the street, 9 times out of 10, he's probably going to be exactly how the same as he is on video as he is in the street.
Yeah.
You know, you just need to be, I guess, yourselves, you know, if you're into, I don't know, like, anything. If you're, you know, if you're a quiet sort of person, there's even ways you can, you know, flip it around that. You know, it's, if you are a comedian and you find it, you know, or I guess in a way it's a little bit of self-reflection. It's, you know, what image do you want to the world of yourself?
Yeah.
Which I guess in a way we're always thinking of every single day, you know, especially as artists. Well, I want my press pictures to look a certain way, you know, like your new press shots, you'll be like, well, I want my fashion within it to look this way because I want this image of it. So you just try and take that and just say, okay, well, how can I support, what video content would I like to see that supports that image of me? You know?
Totally.
I think it's just sort of, you know, if you look at, like, say, you know, people like your Corollas and, you know, your Clooney, they, you know, they all have the content and so on. I mean, if you actually, you know, look at Corolla, 9 times out of 10, majority of the stuff I see is filmed on an iPhone. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's very... It's like minimal, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, even with Clune, it's just a little,
yeah,
little hand flicks, stuff like that, where you go to, say, someone like James Hyatt, where it's an iPhone moving in, total energy, but it's completely different. But you wouldn't expect, artists shouldn't expect themselves to say, okay, well, that's working for James Hyatt, I'm going to go do that. 100%. No, because that works, because that is James. That is James as an artist. James
as a
has that energy. And that is how he is. Yeah. So you shouldn't just say, okay, well, that's working for James, so I should go do that. Or, you know, oh, well, Fish is being a comedian, so I should go do that.
Yeah.
You know, like Martin Garrix's content, I would say, is very just, he's just a down-to-earth, well, it comes across, I would say, is just, I don't want to say kid because he's not a kid anymore, but like when he was first doing it, you know, he was just a kid who just wanted to make music, and, you know, he had a track that absolutely blew up and went stupidly big, and he's just riding that wave. It's like, but it wasn't necessarily, it's going to be, you know, he didn't say, look at, trying to think of different artists within their like subgenres of that. But yeah, I think just effectively is you can't, I mean, you can look at other artists and say, oh, would, you know, okay, Fish's comedy stuff's really, really working. Okay, well, am I funny? I'm not funny. Yeah. I am not the funny one in the group. I know that. But what I am really good at is talking, and I have a passion for, is like the production side of things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I did like videos on, you know, like when Drum Sheds opened, you know, got down and did all them, you know, the walking around, talking about sound, talking about the lights. I love this
technical
connection.
Side.
Yeah, and I love talking to like generic audiences, or let's say like ravers, and explaining to them how production makes such a difference. Because like the best way to describe it is if you're in a kitchen and you have, and you're doing DJ sets of all your mates having an afters and the big kitchen lights on, the vibe is going to be completely different if you've got a little Alexa lamp in the corner changing. Mm-hmm. Like it's all subconscious, you're not understanding. And I love describing that to people, you know. So I say, oh yeah, like I synced visuals up at the weekend, like how sick's that, because everyone's seeing the lyrics come up on screen. And it's just like, oh, what? It's like, but that's me. That's what I couldn't go and be Fisher, come out wearing a bucket hat, sunglasses, standing on the riser, swinging my top around. People would be like,
what the fuck is he doing?
What on earth is Reece doing? Like, it just wouldn't work.
And people would notice that, and it doesn't feel organic. So it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I feel like you have to be organic to yourself. And I guess in the past, it's been such a cliche world. You have to be organic and you have to be original. But like it's mentioned, like it's not necessarily being original. It's just being yourself, like be honest to yourself. Be like, okay, am I this type of person or am I this? There's no right or wrong. It's completely whatever you are most comfortable. Because the thing is, if you're most comfortable when you're doing it, that content, you may think, oh, it's not going to perform as well. No, it will, because you'll be more comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
So in time, you'll make more content. And then because you've made more content, there's a higher chance of that going off. And people can tell. Like, we are very, very smart as, you know, human beings. You know, we can normally pick up when someone's maybe sort of telling a lie or when someone feels uncomfortable. It comes across in your body language.
Totally.
You know, you might be really like, oh, yeah, oh, I'm forcing this. Oh, like, but if someone's just nice and relaxed, like laughing around, it just works, man.
No, I totally agree. Staying on the content thing, how much content should somebody post? Because this is the tough one, isn't it? Because it's
tough.
You're told on like TikTok, post 5 times a day, post blah blah blah, post this, post that. But like, what's real?
It's really interesting because recently I've seen the opposite of it. So like with a brand I manage, we were posting loads for an event around summer, and tickets just weren't flying. And the second we stopped going content, and just went more meaningful posts once a week, we sold out.
Yeah.
So it's like, and we've kept that philosophy, we've kept that we've kept that theory strategy going forward, and it's working. It's almost like we think it's subconsciously portraying confidence in that we're not overselling it in a way. I that content question is such an interesting one, because effectively you can look at it a different way. You could say, well, the more content you put out, the more chances you have. It depends what the I think it all comes down to what the end goal is.
Yeah.
And the artist level. If you are an aspiring artist who's looking to get your name out there and get as much exposure as possible, you want to get from 1,000 followers to 10,000. You want to get your name known. You want to get your tracks known. Then the game is content. You need to put out as much content as you can. If you're a producer making edits, you need to do as many edits as you can. Still to a... I don't think you should sacrifice too much quality because it's so tough. It's such a tough one to answer. I think it comes down to what the end goal is, because if you're trying to get more exposure, then the way you get more exposure is you put yourself in more places. And more places you are, the more exposure you get. That's just naturally how it is. You know, if a company wants a car sales to go up, what do? They put more ads out there. More people see the ads, more people go buy the cars.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're already at a very, very established level, you know, it might just be that you say, okay, well, I'm already doing big tents and stages at festivals. I'm selling out my own shows. Tickets are good. I'm comfy, but I don't feel as close to my audience as I want to. I want to build that relationship with my audience. So you then look at it from a totally different aspect and say, okay, well, what we're going to do, rather than just hammer content and put out 10 videos a day, we're just going to put out one or two really nice pieces of content a week that are meaningful and that are maybe lean more on that long form content side. Mm. Or it could be anything. It could be a sit down. It could be a sit down Q&A.
Yeah.
You know, sit down Q&As, and even doing the questions box on Instagram is such a good thing. Like, you do that and respond with video messages, because that's fans are talking directly to them. You know, 9 times out of 10, if you're a very, very big artist, you're going into the request box. It's got thousands of DMs. Mm-hmm. But if you do a question thing, the artist can very easily sit there and just scroll. Oh, I like that one. I'll reply. Oh, yeah. So this is the synthesizer that I use. I actually use it on this track. I really, really like it. And it's actually got a fault on it. But because that fault enables me to make this type of sound.
Yeah.
And that's why I'll never get rid of it. Mm. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, my word. Like, wow, that's a meaningful piece of content. And it's just done on, you know, an iPhone.
Totally.
So I think ultimately it comes down to, what is the end goal? What is the end goal for the artist?
Makes complete sense. And I think that's something that artists need to work out themselves. And that takes time as well. That takes time to try content, to film content, to like experiment with what feels right for them. And I think the goal can change as well. The goal can 100% change. It's just working out what's right. I want to go into the transition from being a content creator to being an artist, and for you, and kind of like go over that of like why.
Yeah. Ultimately, it didn't come overnight. That was for sure. It was, I wanted to start making music even when I was touring with Mark. Always wanted to. You know, when I was younger, I originally wanted to be an entertainer and a dancer. Tried singing, not a great singer. But you know, I played musical instruments. I played the trumpet. I played the drums when I was in school. Like, had a drum kit. Yeah. Tried to be in a band. That failed epically. So I've always been very, very heavily in music. And then even when you look to, you know, then I was DJing from 16 to 18, and you know, I loved that, and that was doing really well. And then video just sort of took over. You know.
Yeah.
Life moves and that's what happens, but that passion was always there. And when I was touring with Mark, I remember buying a little MIDI keyboard or something, had a cracked version of Fruity Loops, and like just started to try and learn like the basics. And then, as anything, touring gets in the way and years move on in your life and so on. And then I started basically doing these industry networking events, and I needed DJs out there. They were like with a bit of a twist. I needed DJs out there. And I was like, well, save some money. I'll do a set and we'll still pay to get other DJs in, but I'll jump on and do it.
Yeah.
And I got the itch back. And
the itch is amazing.
Yeah. And I really started to, and this was all post COVID. So, you know, I think I rebought a keyboard through COVID. And as if anything, you put your plans to, you're like, yeah, I'm going to do this. By the end of it, I'm going to be making tracks. Didn't happen. In a weird way, my videography career went through its second boost up in COVID. I did a mad decision in the middle of COVID, moved to London, but all of a sudden I was close to all these artists and relationships I'd built through, started working a lot with like Sonny Federa and Palm Artists and all that side of the team, you know, so doing loads of different bits. And that career then for about a year and a half, music career, just went amazing. Mm. And then I started to get in something that I just wasn't happy, man. And it really started to compound to the point where the beginning of this year, you know, I was in a very, very depressive state. I was on holiday with all the boys traveling through like Thailand and Bali and just broke down, just said to the lads, I'm so unhappy with my life. And they're like, but from the outside, it looks like you have everything. Cause I'd give all that up to just be happy again.
Yeah.
Like, and it was sort of, and I wanted to do the music stuff. I would look to do courses and becoming, you know, like a, I guess you'd class it like a content influencer within the space or something like that. And I took on a business coach and just started doing things. And one of the goals at the beginning of the year was to at least make two tracks.
Yeah.
So just get started. And I made my first track in Jan. It was an edit of a Beyonce track. And I was like, it did all right, actually. It still does all right on SoundCloud. Put it up. It's terrible. I don't even want to. Yeah. And then I went to Miami Music Week, got a new Mac, and I was like, I'm going to learn how to do Ableton in this flight. 10-hour flight, I'm going to learn how to do it. Had a bunch of like just packs and stuff, and I just sat there and I made a track, and I played it every single day in my room before heading out. I was like, oh my, like this, I actually generally think, and I found was that nearly all of my skills as a content creator are transferable in terms of like the door and like because a linear editing system is very similar. And I used to love, like, I used to really get in depth on my after movies on like the audio bed and adding in sound effects and Foley and all this stuff. So I had a bit of a base knowledge of it. And then I made this track. I think I got legs on this, you know. And then I put out a snippet of it at the end of like my carousel for Miami Music Week. And I was getting a couple of DJs, like big DJs, reach out to me. Like Emily Nash, I remember a key one, she reached out. She was just like, can you send me this? This, like, from the snippet sounds really good. And I was like, I think I'm onto something here. Like, and then obviously I'm very, very early in my career, but like, do you know what it was? For the first time in years, I just made me happy, man. I was just made me so, so happy. And when post Miami Music Week, we started to build out like a house music brand. I was still living in London, but I did a gig in Leicester at my mate's bar, met another DJ, they had a brand. I was like, hey, I've always wanted to throw raves. I was like, let's do a little rooftop party somewhere.
Yeah,
we did that. I obviously then got to DJ that, and you know, build out. And then I was still doing lots of video work, was still my main income, still doing loads of work. So it was all just like as and when I got time, but I wanted to just apply more time to it. And it got more and more and more. And then gradually as this year has progressed, it's like making more time for productions, making more time for it, trying. I tried to do courses. I tried to do consultancy, which I still do. But it was then I had like after trying these other business ideas, was realizing I always keep coming back to this music. And I was like, I generally, for the first time in my, I don't necessarily, so when I started as a videographer, I didn't know what I could do. I didn't know I could earn, be self-employed doing it. In a weird way, the bar was set so low for me. So anytime I did something amazing, it was like, yeah, cool, sick. But I always, everything I applied myself to, I ticked off within 6 months.
Because,
you know, I said I really want to go on tour with an artist. 6 months later, I was, you know, I went full-time touring with, you know, MK. Then after that, I was like, okay, I really want to get this job with this people or another artist. Okay, sick, now I'm working with this artist and now I'm doing this. And it was like, I just completed everything I'd wanted to. I just wasn't satisfied. I hated videoing and I hated editing. And it was like, it became a 9-to-5. I was like, I have to do this to pay, especially living in London at the time. Like, I have to do this. Yeah, I have to do this job or I've got to do it. And I'm filming. And, you know, just because, you know, being in the industry for as long as I have, you know, lots of artists, and I'm going to these shows and I'm filming and I'm like, I want that to be me. Like, I don't. And it didn't come from for me, it's not, oh, I want to do it because of the money and all that. I would honestly do it. I don't really make any money. I don't make any money through music at the minute, but like, that doesn't bother me. I don't care. Like, and in a weird way, I almost don't want to become super big with it because I don't want it to get to the position where it did with video.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, now I depend on this and I have to, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, and then it turns into the job. It turns into the 9 to 5, which is an amazing concept to have.
Mm.
But there's also comes that with, you take on teams and then teams rely on you and people rely on you, and then you're not just earning money for you, you're earning money for other people, and then you have to start paying people. Then it's a whole business.
It's a business. Yeah. But it's yeah, as I sort of say to people, like, I've never been, even in my video, I never knew what the end goal could potentially be. So I never really had the full confidence to do it. You just kept grinding.
Yeah.
But with the music, I generally believe I will be successful with music.
Mm.
Like, how I define that success, I can't put something on at the minute.
Yeah.
But for me, it's just, I know that this is what I want to do now.
Yeah.
And everything that I'm doing is going towards that. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, look at all the connections you've got, you know, look at all these artists and labels and all stuff, you know. And I say to them, I said, yeah, but you think that's good, but for me, it's not a negative. It's 100% not a negative, but it is an additional pressure for me because I feel like there's eyes on what I put out. I'd like to say, because of the video content I've put out, I like to do everything to quite a high standard.
Yeah.
So for me, I hold myself to a high standard. So, you know, I went through 5 different tracks for my debut release, and yeah, already I'm fed up of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I now know, I'm like, I don't want to put this record out because I already know I can make something way better.
Yeah.
So, and obviously I'm sure every artist goes through that, especially with how long, and that's also another thing, we learn in how long it actually takes to get a record out. And
how long it takes to write a good record and how long it takes. It's a process. It's exactly the same as probably what you went through with video. Right, but you forget about that because it becomes like riding a bike, if you know what I mean. It's like, I can go and write a club record with my eyes closed, but the only reason why I've done that is because you've done it for so long. It's that 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
But like, it's still like, you've got to do way more than 10,000 hours to get to the point where it's even good, and then 90% of the time it's shit, and that 10% it's fucking great.
It's really interesting, but for me, it's ultimately like, I haven't done it because, and I know some people are, like, oh, you just jumping on the next bandwagon, you're doing this. It's like, I've actually been, you know, been making the music for a while. I had to, yeah. I wanted it to get to a stage where I was comfortable to put it out. But for me, it's, this is what makes me happy. I've always been in music. I've always done it. And I generally believe that I can make something of it. And that's what makes me happy. You know, I played a New Year's Eve gig the other day, 1,700 people.
Mm.
Midnight set, and that it was just, even my mates said, they were like, I've never seen you like that, yeah, ever. Yeah. And I went, bro, just pure happiness. Like, I can't put a finger on it. It's like all these things I dreamed as a kid. That's why I'm there. Like, we had a really cool, like, the crowd were really, really close to us. And I'm like, I'm looking at them and I'm doing this. And then there's a track that I've used, like a vocal sample, perfect track, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. And I've played it a few of my gigs, but I brought it in and people were like, yay, there's people on shoulders. And I'm just like, this is a track I have made at an event I own. And I can't, like, I'm so, like, happy. Like, even now, I just get so excited talking about it. Like, but I love, like, this journey stage of it because it's so, you know, going out and meeting other artists and, you know, it is fantastic that I have these networks and opportunities. But I see that as a bigger challenge because, you know, someone said, oh, you can just message blah, blah, blah to put you on that lineup. I was like, no, no, no. And if they did that, I wouldn't accept it. Like,
well, it just doesn't work like that generally.
No, it definitely doesn't work.
Just because,
like,
you know somebody.
Exactly.
And this is the thing, is half the people that are saying that shit don't have a fucking clue. Like, I know Idris Elba. Does it mean that I'm going to be fucking starring in the next Idris Elba film? Absolutely not. Like, it's literally, it's that facts, is that it's just not the case. Like, yeah, if it worked like that, then it's just not how
it's,
it is.
You know, I like the additional pressure. I sort of forget that I'm like, you know, as you'll know, you come off an amazing gig he got that real big buzz. And obviously, fortunately for you, it is your full-time thing. But for me, I'm them like, damn, I got to go make some money. I'm like, oh, okay, well. But it's you know what? I love it so much. I love, and it's not for me, it's not, it's everything around it. I love building the show. I love the process. Yeah. Like, I'm starting the whole, you know, jumping into sessions now with artists, and they're like, oh, we can do it over Zoom. I'm like, no, come on. Like, I'll go rent a studio. Let's get in there. Let's fire ideas off. Like,
it's the journey, man. It's the journey.
Yeah. And I think it makes me so, I cannot wait. And I feel like the first part of this year has been, you know, in just incredible. Like I sort of soft launched it in like December. I got 2 gigs off the back of that.
Yeah.
You know, even like this week is crazy. You know, I had an insane New Year's Eve party. I'm on, even this being on your podcast is such a massive, that it was a bucket list thing to tick off. So it's like on Wheels Pod, just because of the names and the caliber of people that you have on, man, like it's massive. And I thank you,
no worries,
you know,
thank you
for having me on. And, but then it's like, then tomorrow my debut track comes out, and then it's the day after I'm playing, I'm supporting my friends on their headline show.
Sick.
And it's like, this is January. Like, what? It's just, but yeah.
It's
I love it, man. I can't really put into words how much I love this scene and I love this industry. And I have so much passion for it. And like, COVID really hit me hard when we all like, we just couldn't do stuff. And I generally want everybody to win. And it's just, I love it, man. I love this scene so much.
Mate, I think that's a perfect way to end this, because I think it's just great, great way to end
it. I actually, beforehand, because I'll keep myself down, I have a question for you.
Go for it.
So you played, as you started off, you did obviously Seasons in Ibiza.
Yeah.
You played the Sunset set. What is your number one Sunset track?
Candy Staten, You Got the Love.
Lovely.
But that's when the sets, when the sun's set.
Oh, that's when the sun's set. Okay.
So like, there's this thing where you have to play a record. So when the sun sets, it's quite technical. It used to be anyway, but you'd have to find a record that when it ended, the sun sets.
Gotcha. So just as it tips below, it's.
Yeah. And then after that, it would be a record that's like, I would then play like Candy Staten, You Got the Love. But like the OG version that we know. There's plenty. Moby, Why Does Your Heart? Classic.
Love it.
Just lots of kind of like classic electronica for me. That's like, that was the reason why I do it, realistically. But that's it, man.
Yeah, sorry to jump that
no,
in.
Man,
yeah,
no, man, I'm down.
Where I listened to the pods, I was like, it's been in my notes for like 6 months. And like, and I was like, it was in my thing. I was like, when I eventually end up on the Will Clark podcast, I'm going to ask him that question.
Louis Armstrong, Wonderful World is an amazing record as well. I'd play that quite a lot. Just something that like, for me, it's about creating a memory for someone. And it's like, this is everybody that's, or 99% of the people that are there on holiday. And this is like maybe this is the first time they've ever seen the sunset. How can I make this the most memorable first time in Ibiza? Where like every time they hear that record again, it's going to take them back to when they were in Ibiza. And music can do that really well. And I think for me, it was, how can I create that memory for them? So it would be like finding iconic records that they weren't ever going to expect to be played after that. I haven't been and watched the sunset for a very long time, like at Mambo or anything like that, but when I was there, it was a big job to do that. I don't know if it's there happened so much now. I don't think it's is like geeky and kind of what's the word? It was hard to get that as a DJ spot.
Yeah.
Like people would beg to do that. And
it was a pinnacle, wasn't it? Pinnacle of every IB for trip was you'd always go the see sunset. The sunset.
Yeah, I feel like I'm sure it's still there, but I feel like it's lost a little bit, which is fine. Things change.
Damn TikTok.
How can people follow you, mate? How can people get involved with your stuff?
Yeah, cool. So it's EV Pro on everything. So EVPRO. So yeah, EV Pro. By the time this is out, my, as I say, debut single will be out called Flip It. Go stream it, go listen. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, please tell me why, because that's how I build as an artist, constructive criticism. Thank you, Will, for having me on, man. It's been, I love what you've done with like the podcast as well, man. Seeing it obviously through the years growing and
thank you, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I love it.
It's gonna be interesting this year. Let's hope.
I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I love it, man. You're there with me. You're my co-pilot every time I'm driving somewhere. So
amazing, man. It's weird to me that it's weird. But yeah, no, thank you so much for coming on, man. Like, it's been great to see you over the years kind of grow your business in film, and I can't wait to see you do what you want to do in as an artist. And if I can ever help, hit me up.
Big love. I appreciate that, man.
Big love. Thank keep you, safe, bro. Mate. Take care.
Cheers,
see you
man.
Soon. Peace. Thanks, mate. That was awesome.
Cheers, man. I have also I've recorded it on my phone, so it's a proper visual. You do need it, I know it's on. I did want to bring my proper camera, but I couldn't get it to work.
It's all good, man.
So I didn't know, obviously, because of the quality on the fucking iPhone.
Yeah, man.
I hope that was all good, man. Sorry I was late at the beginning, bro. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry, man. It's all totally fine. Yeah, this isn't coming out. Let me find out when this is coming out. Sheets. Podcast. It's not coming out for a while. It's probably...
Where are you at the minute? Are you in the US?
No, I'm in the UK.
Are you in the UK?
Yeah.
How was New Year's Eve, by the way? That looks sick.
Yeah, it was really good.
It looked really good, man.
Yeah, it was really good. Mate, one sec. I think yours is going to be coming out on the 13th of Feb.
Okay, sick. I know you always record like a whole month, month or a bit ahead. So,
I think I just need to. And how do you want me to do it? Is it just Reese Evans?
Just do it as EV Pro.
Okay.
If that's cool.
EV Pro. All one word?
Yeah, all one word.
Capital letters?
Capitals, yeah.
Cool. Done. I will make sure that that gets put in.
Cheers. But yeah, man, no, thank you for, honestly, I weren't lying, man. It was on a bucket list thing to get on the Will Clark pod.
Sick, man.
Yeah, it's fucking sick. I appreciate the opportunity, man.
Anytime, massively. Man. Anytime. Keep in touch and I'll catch you soon, all right?
Defo.
Peace, man.
Big love, man.
Bye.
Cheers, man.
And that's a wrap. Big love to everybody that's listened. Please subscribe. Please give us some comments. Please give us some reviews. It means that the podcast keeps going. Thank you very much. Till next time.
What if you could have a career where the opportunities are as vast as our nation, where it's not about mission statements, but a shared mission? At U.S. Customs and Border Protection, we go beyond to protect more than borders. From ship to shore, air to ground, cities to local communities, CBP agents and officers are keeping people safe. Join U.S. Customs and Border Protection and go beyond for something far greater than yourself. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.